Do you want to know the difference between Botox and dermal fillers? Do you want to know the difference between thread lifts and facelifts? Do you want to know the reasons some people choose to improve their appearance with aesthetic medicine? What makes our patients and our doctors tick? Hello, and welcome to Aesthetic Medicine Uncovered. My name is Simon Ravichandran, and in this series of podcasts, we will be talking about what aesthetic medicine actually is, the procedures that we offer, what we do, and why we do it. I hope you'll find it interesting, and I hope it answers some questions you may have. This podcast is produced by the Clinetics Group, Scotland's leading multi-award-winning aesthetic medical clinics. Hi there, I'm Simon Ravichandran, and I'm here with Dr. Paula Mann again.
Hello, nice to see you, Simon.
And we're just starting this mid-conversation, aren't we? Because we were just having a chat about, well, we started off talking about regulation in aesthetic medicine, but we kind of steered on to who's practicing, who can practice. And, you know, the thing is, we don't really want to get into a sort of, you know, a bashing situation where we're saying we're better than everyone else. But you know, I think, you know, there's, you had a really, a nice concept there, Paula, didn't you?
Yeah, we were just having a sort of friendly debate about regulation and what's happening now. And I didn't, you know, as medically qualified people, we obviously have reasons to prefer that patients would see medically qualified aesthetic practitioners. But at the same time, I didn't want it to turn into a bashing exercise where we were saying everything is bad. Because while in this country, just to confirm, in this country, really anybody can carry out non-surgical facial aesthetic procedures. And I don't think that anybody who's non-medical but does these procedures sets out to be bad or to cause harm. I think for the most part, they genuinely will enjoy it or think they'll enjoy it and want to provide a service that people want and they want to run a business. Mm-hmm. So there's probably just differences in mindsets about the type of service that they're providing and a difference in mindsets about longevity of treatment and potential problems. Because if you don't have a medical background, you don't know what you don't know, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I have a medical background, as do you, Paula, and I still don't know what I don't know. That's the nature of the beast. We can talk for hours about our own personal qualifications and experience. I don't really think we need to. I think what we need to understand is what are we practicing with aesthetic medicine? What are we doing compared to what someone else is doing with aesthetic medicine? Who doesn't have the same base qualifications that we do, because we've got an underpinning training, a medical education, so the biology, physiology, anatomy, psychology, sociology, everything else. We have kind of, at least I would like to hope, an ingrained behavioural ethic, a behavioural approach towards the practice of everything that we do. I think the skill set that we learnt at medical school and the skill set that you learnt at dental school taught you an ethic and a behaviour and a culture that affects everything in your wider life, not just your practice. And we have this concept that when we're providing medical care, it's a complicated thing, but it's an ongoing thing. There's a specific goal to that medical care, which is an improvement in quality of life. And there's a long-term maintenance of that improvement and a long-term duty of care to your patient, to stay with them, to help them through their health journey. And I mean, that's we can break that down into 15 or 20 smaller segments, but when I pick up a syringe of anything, so the basic treatment that I'm doing, one area of botulinum toxin, one area of Botox for the glabellar lines to remove the lines and wrinkles. For me, that is a medical procedure because it has a definite improvement in a patient's quality of life. We have to assess the patient to make sure that they're appropriate for it, that they're suitable for it, that they're understanding that this is a treatment to improve their quality of life and their emotional, psychological health and well-being. And we need to make sure that they're aware of the potential future issues, complications that are associated with that. And we've got a duty of care to maintain that treatment for that patient forever, essentially. So that's my approach to aesthetic medicine. And as you said earlier, if you're a beauty therapist or a hairdresser, or essentially in the UK, anyone who's been on the course to learn how to do it, they've learned how to do that particular procedure. technically. They've just learned how to do that particular procedure on a very basic level. And it's not even a case of, well, everyone's going to get exactly the same procedure. There's going to be no variation for different people. They've just learned how to do that procedure, and they haven't got, I would imagine, the understanding of the why they're doing it, the diagnosis, the assessment, the maintenance, the management, everything else that goes with turning it from a technical treatment to holistic medical care. I think this is where the differences lie fundamentally.
Yeah, yeah, they're at the working end of a syringe, really. And so the big difference is there's no extensive training before and there's no continuous training after. And that thing that they are doing, that procedure that they're doing, potentially could cause harm.
Yeah.
And their ability to deal with that harm is not there.
Yeah.
You know, so we do a lot of teaching, and just about all of the people I teach and all of my colleagues in the clinic have got a long, years-long careers in whatever profession they have done. So they've been a dentist for years, or a doctor for years, or a nurse for years first. So there's a lot to being a practitioner, not just an aesthetic practitioner. And also in practice, we have the ability to collaborate with each other and people out with the clinic as well. So apart from just being trained to deal with any problems, which is really what patients think about, they do consider, what will I do if something goes wrong? They need to have that professional backup. We have ourselves and our training, we have each other. And because of our duty of care and because of the absolute necessity to report complications and the duty to do that, we have people out with the wider aesthetic field.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we're our own internal network. We're not a single-handed practice. So we've got people within the practice who have more in-depth knowledge and experience in particular techniques or treatments. So, you know, if there's a laser-related issue, there's someone in the practice who's got more experience in lasers. If it's a botulinum toxin or a dermal filler-related issue, same applies to whatever treatment we're doing. But there's the wider sphere. We're members of the British College of Aesthetic Medicine, and we're various other professional organisations, but we've got access to a much wider network of support amongst our peers for advice and for support and for continued education and learning. And even outside of that, we've still got the support of device suppliers, pharmaceutical manufacturers, because we work very closely with them. We've got a duty of care to report everything that goes wrong. The pharmacovigilance code that we adhere to means that we have to make the pharmaceutical companies and device companies aware of each and every issue or complication that arises as a result of treatment, so that they can disseminate the information and we can generally learn and continue to improve.
Yeah, so their patients, we feel strongly that then that puts our patients in a much better position. And it's going to be obvious listening to us that we feel that patients should be going to medical practitioners. But one of the things, my background is in dentistry, and I was a dentist for almost 20 years. And that meant that I had patients who I knew for 20 years. I knew their parents and I knew their children. So I had this unique and privileged, but sometimes stressful situation where I had to look after the same patient every 6 months for a huge portion of their lives. And my aesthetic practice is not all that different from that. When we take patients on, we take them and we educate them, and they grow with us. So that's also very different from unregulated aesthetic, sort of one-off aesthetic treatments.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to develop and grow and teach and reach expectations over the long term.
Yeah. I think that the word is commoditization. This is what I think. If it's a commodity, you go to the shop, you buy a pint of milk, that's a commodity. If you go to a cosmetic practitioner, I don't know what we would call them. If you go to your air hostess who's just been on the course for a syringe of lip filler, you've purchased a commodity, and that's very different. If everything goes well and you're very happy with the result, that's okay, that's brilliant. But you might not have had the right treatment for you. You might not have had the right approach. You might have complications, you might have issues with it. So that's the commodity-based process. Whereas when you go to a healthcare clinic that provides aesthetic medical procedures, you're not having a commodity. You have a consultation with an expert practitioner who can discuss with you what your expectations are, what your needs are, what your wants are, and determine an appropriate treatment choice for you. So no one ever comes to a practice like this, say, I'm here for one syringe of filler or one area of Botox. They come to a practice to ask, what can you do to help me feel better because my appearance is concerning me in some way or some form? And there's a huge gulf of difference. And I feel that our patients, like you said, are more protected.
Yeah, and it's difficult, isn't it? You know, non-medical practices present really compelling businesses. You know, their websites are lovely, the information that they provide, their abilities seem set and clear. So I can see if I was a patient seeking a practice, it would be really hard to choose. You know, so we're encouraging patients and the public generally to look a little bit deeper, ask more questions, find out who the practitioner is, what's their background, what's their training. These are questions that we quite frequently get asked, actually, and I never mind. I never mind when patients come and say, what do you do? How many of these have you done? What's your background? You know, yeah. I feel really, really happy to talk about
it. It's a
that.
Good ask. I do like the, you are actually a doctor, aren't you, question. I do like that.
A real doctor.
Yes, I am a doctor. Yes. Yes, I am. My dad would be very proud of me. I like that. It's good to get that. But you're absolutely right. The websites, the text can be very, very misleading. So you get, you know, we've seen the ones where the practitioner has a stethoscope around their neck, you know, clearly trying to demonstrate that they're medically qualified in some way or some form. Or they either don't talk about their qualifications. It doesn't say so anywhere on the website that there are, you know, doctors and dentists and nurses running the practice, but you know, everything else is absolutely wonderful. They talk a lot about their training. I've seen quite a few websites have actually listed my name as a mentor.
Really?
I have been trained by the world famous Dr. Ravi Chandran. Like, oh gosh, let me. No, I don't think they have. I've looked them up.
Yeah. So don't believe everything you see.
Yeah.
Ask, physically ask, don't be shy to ask. And maybe more importantly, since we kind of accepted there is a demand for treatments and there's a demand for these quick, short-term treatments. Everybody wants different things. A really important issue might be around people's ability to deal with complications, which are rare, but they are possible. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm right in saying actually for quite a long time, non-medical practitioners' complications rates were, you know, somewhat acceptable. It wasn't so terrible.
I think, yeah, they're getting higher.
But they are now, yeah.
Yeah, the latest report shows that we are seeing more and more complications from non-medics. And don't get me wrong, we see complications from medics as well. And we are seeing more and more complications from non-medics. And there's a bit of a mismatch because I think it's a disproportionately high number of complications that we see from a small number of practitioners. It's difficult to tell from the data, but definitely there are those complications. And the issue is most reputable medics would be able to manage a complication directly.
The latest data that I read was that medical professionals were dealing with more complications and these complications were more often coming from non-medics. So you can't dispute these facts. And also I was reading some consultation papers and it's very clear in Scotland, for example, 99% of people want clarification around facial aesthetics. They want something in place which makes them feel safer, whether it's licensing, you know, whether it's being able to pin down some official qualification, I don't know. But there is a need and a want for some change.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Do you want to get into regulation or should we talk about that in the next session?
talk about that in the next session. All right. And have a coffee now.
Coffee sounds good. All right, thanks for that, Paula. That was a really interesting discussion. I very enjoyed that. Thanks.
Thanks, Simon.